Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave. Oh, my. Yes, it's a different time. Hopefully you are not still listening. Well, maybe you are listening now, but if you've been holding on since 1 o'clock Eastern time today, I am so sorry. This is one of those highly specialized programs. Usually I wouldn't do this, but if it's a case where time is of the essence and there is a conflict as far as this is the only time that we can do it and something big is coming up, well, guess what? I just bent the rules today. Normally, the show is on usually from 1 to 4 Eastern time, but today, because Joanna Pascal is at Temple University at this moment teaching a class, she'll get out of class, she'll come join us at 4:30 or thereabouts, and then she will be off to her regular gig at Lowe's in Philly. And since the St. Michael's Jazz Festival is coming up this weekend, we didn't have any choice. So that's how much I think of Joanna Pascal. She's a marvelous singer. And speaking of which, I just wanted to make sure you knew this. Just a mere moments ago, I had a steak and salad, a steak and salad, rather. And I thought to myself, you know, it's fitting that I would have this kind of lunch because the person that we are about to speak to is the filet mignon of singers. Seriously. I have to thank my friend Susie Zenk for getting us together. Otherwise, I might not have never known about this gentleman. And the more I delve into this background of Mark Arthur Miller's, it's just really astounding, and it's further proof that nothing is by coincidence. This man is an actor. He's actually has been involved in tennis for a while and is, I'm going to just say it, a pro. And he's a singer that has taken beautiful arrangements that were in our ear anyway, but turned them around in such a way that they have become his own. Without further ado, this is Mark Arthur Miller. Yay!
Hello. I'm blushing.
Listen, it's only the beginning of the show. You're going to be blushing so much, there will be fields of blush before the end of the show.
I like those fields. Wow. That's really beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, thank you to Susie and thank you to you. Oh, my God. This is just absolutely serendipity, Mark, that you should be on the show. Because you and I talked the other day, and it's as if we have talked before several times.
Yeah, I think a few past lives that we've been involved in each other.
I think so. I don't know what it is, and isn't that weird when it happens? Because you and I were probably listening to the exact same music at the same time back in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. And a few other million people.
Yeah, but isn't it, what's that song, Somewhere Out There, that Linda Ronstadt and James Ingram sing about, you know, seeing the moon at the same time, and somehow that is a way of connecting people when you were in a different place. You were in Chicago with your mom and your grandmother, and you were listening to Motown. And
absolutely,
you have to explain these circumstances because you loved the music of Motown. And you take the story from there because this is so wild, I can't believe it.
Well, I'm not alone in loving the music of Motown. I mean, I think it's my generation's music, actually.
Sure.
Especially where I grew up. I grew up I was raised by my grandparents, my grandfather, my grandmother, and my mom in an all-black neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. Actually, South Park, and then it became Martin Luther King Drive. And I was my grandparents were the last white family there, and I was the only, you know, white kid there. And it was pretty much, you know, WGRT and WVON and soul music. Not that we didn't listen to other music, but, you know, that was predominantly it. So it seemingly was part of my DNA. And my father had pretty much, my mother and father had divorced when I was 2, and I saw my dad a little bit when I was 6 years old. You know, he was in the arts and an actor and a singer and a songwriter. And what happened was, is all of a sudden my dad's name started turning up on, you know, Motown labels on songs. And, you know, I was trying to convince all my friends that this is actually my dad, you know, and I took some heat from it, like, oh, man, that's not your dad, you know, but in fact it was. In fact, it was. You know, he wrote "For Once in My Life," "Touch Me in the Morning," "Heaven Help Us All," "Yesterday," "A Place in the Sun." And if you can see this young white kid telling all his black friends, my dad wrote those records, you know. And then years and years later, 10 years later, I connected with my dad and actually moved out to L.A. because Motown had moved. And, you know, then had a fabulous relationship with my dad for the next, you know, 40 years probably, you know.
And you know what? But, it's funny because you said seemingly in my DNA. No, baby, it was literally in your DNA.
Yeah, exactly. Little did I know, you know. Little did I know. I mean, We had we used to do block club parties when we were young and lip sync the songs and then sing songs a cappella. We used to have a little singing group that all my friends, Strick, my oldest friend who was like 3 years older than me, and Marshall. And you know, it was funny because we called ourselves Integration. Now,
and that's a scream.
And that's like a stretch because the only integration was one white guy, me, and like five or six other black guys.
But they thought it was a big deal, though, because, I mean, you're the token white guy.
Yeah, exactly, totally. And, you know,
oh, my
all
God.
The girls, you know, all the girls back then said, man, that white boy can sing.
That's something. Even then, I mean, you just, is it something that you did around the house? Did your grandparents or your mom say to you, oh, my gosh, you really have a good voice? Or was it something that was just so natural to you that you were doing it as far back as you remember?
I tell the story when people said, because I was an actor for years in Chicago and had a theater company, and you know, I did some musicals, but I wasn't, for a long, long period of time, I wasn't singing as much. Even though my mom will tell you that the first thing that I said was I wanted to be a singer. But unfortunately, I had a major car accident when I was 5 years old. I got hit by a car.
Oh.
So
oh my God.
I was 5, you know, and I was in the hospital for 2 months, and we barely saved me, to tell you the truth. But what it did is it shattered my nose, and so I could never really breathe out of my nose. So I sang all the time, but I didn't sing correctly because, you know, you need to sing out of your mask, and I really didn't have any air in there. And so, you know, even when I met my dad, he would do recordings with me and say, man, you can really sing. But I got surgery when I was 30 years old, so my air passage, you know, air passageways were cleared up, and all of a sudden then I started really singing. So it's almost like I took the longest road to get to where I really wanted to be in the first place, you know. So.
Bless your heart. Oh, my gosh. 5 years old. Do you remember the accident, Mark?
I remember bits and pieces. I remember, I don't remember being hit. I remember just before being hit. I remember my skull being wide open and feeling like there was air being blown through my forehead. I remember being in a taxi cab because the ambulance, you know, like a lot of people say, depending on what neighborhood you get to, that's how quick the police and the ambulance get there. Well, a taxi cab picked me up and rushed me to the hospital. It just happened to be passing by.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I am so glad that you are still with us because, woo!
So am I.
So, you have had quite a life. And that is just, it's not icing on the cake because that usually refers to something good. But that really puts things in perspective. You were given this amazing chance to make a difference. And you really have. You seem to have attracted, as far as I can tell in the short time I've known you, these really, how can I say this, these folks who feel as if they are pulled to you gravitationally. You have something special about you that makes people want to support you. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I'm totally blessed. I mean, with the people in my life, my friends, my family. Yeah, I mean, just on a daily basis. I think if you throw it out there and you care about other people, and you know, it comes back. I mean, it really does. And I think it's important to be true to what you want to do, even though. You know, like I'm a good example of, you know, I'm up there in age and I'm still trying to do what I always want to do. And I think that's important, you know, for people to always have that dream, because, you know, you can sort of get stuck. And if you get stuck, you get old real fast.
Oh, you are not kidding. How many conversations I've had with those who have not followed through. I am on my friend right now for saying to me for the sixth or seventh year in a row, you have to get out of your current circumstances and do the promotion for the artists that you want to communicate with on a daily basis. Because, you know, that really is true for those folks who have a job, and it's wonderful that the bills are getting paid. But if we can all learn in life early that if we find something that is our gift and we figure out a way to make money from it, then we will be happy and thriving human beings.
Yes, absolutely. And even, you know, even to the point of not necessarily, you know, I mean, I do a lot. I have so many musician friends who do make a living at it, but a lot of times have to do other things to, you know, especially these days, to balance income with things that they don't necessarily want to do. But even if you're having to do that part of the time, you have to find time to feed your soul, so to speak, and do what you love. You know,
and
at
you
least not give it up.
Among the many people I know, you're high up there on the list of being able to juggle a few different gifts. Wow. Because you had athletic ability as well as musical ability, and then you had acting chops. I don't know if I told you this in the conversation, but that's another reason why I relate to you so much, because I was at Temple University for 4 years in Philadelphia. Always wanted to be an actress from the time I was a little girl. Was that the case with you?
Yes. You know, I think it went hand in hand. I think acting and athletics are the exact same thing. I mean, I always would joke, because in high school and even college, the athletes don't like the theater people, and the theater people don't like the athletes. And then when you get older, all athletes want to do is become actors and singers, and all actors and singers want to do is do athletics. So it's the same disciplines, and it's the same art. Everybody wants to compete and be in front of people. And do this. So I think they're the same animal, actually. I find the disciplines extremely close in what you have to do to be a good actor and what you have to do to be a great musician.
That's insightful, yeah. And you're right. You know, how many of the athletes that we have seen through the past several years have decided to retire, and that, just like Ray Lewis, here we are in Baltimore from the Baltimore Ravens. Now he's on ESPN.
Right.
Hello?
Mm-hmm.
So that takes some acting ability to be able to do that, because you've got to leave your problems at the doorway and be able to talk about different kinds of things objectively and inject your passion into it. And yes, a lot of the folks who are in the performing industry, really, as far as I know anyway, the older that they get, and certainly I'm putting myself in that situation as well, we really want to be able suddenly to take care of us to the point where we are lean, green machines, because the older that we get, the more we realize if we haven't taken care of us somehow in the early years, it's a little bit tough to catch up, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're talking now, and I have a green drink in front of me, so there you go.
And what is the green drink?
It's kale, carrots. What else do I have? No beets today. Kale, carrots, lime juice, celery, cucumber. I didn't put apple in it today, so it's just greens today.
And you know what? Good thing you said celery. Do you know just this morning there was something posted on Facebook? Do you know that if you do not get organic celery, thank God, because celery supposedly has the most pesticides of all the fruits and vegetables.
And next is apples, so only get organic apples.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, we didn't know this was going to...
I do too much reading on this stuff.
Oh, no, you can't do too much reading. Are you kidding? Because, look, Mark, if the Federal Drug Administration is not taking care of us, looks like we got to take care of ourselves.
Oh, please. I read today that Monsanto was actually getting an agricultural, like, Nobel Prize. So there you
get
go.
Get out of here. Get
yeah,
out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Something's wrong. Something's wrong with the word. They're just handing out these prizes on a gumball machine if Monsanto's getting one. I hope I'm not being too political on your show here. But
oh, you can be as political as you want, because I know where your heart is as far as that is concerned. Look, it's not a bubblegum machine decision. It's money changing hands, and you and I both know it.
Absolutely.
Oh,
and that's another reason to just like dive yourself into the arts, because you know otherwise you could get really depressed.
Oh, I know. And we're not going to have any of that because you're on the show and you're my filet mignon.
Right.
I
love that.
Hey,
can I quote you on that?
We have to figure out a way to say it just right so that people go, oh, I'm going to listen now. And I think it would be a good idea to do a song.
I'd love it.
Okay. So it's a little tough because I had to choose three. And, of course, you know the one I'm saving. Yeah. I thought it would be cool. And there's another one that, of course, is completely captivating. And I wanted to keep things a little light as we dove into this interview. But The Tracks of My Tears, a big song for so many of us back in the day. And Mama Bear here just saw Smokey Robinson at the beginning of the year. The sexiest man I have ever seen on stage, Mark. I haven't seen you yet, so I can't say. But look, he has still got it. What is that all about?
Yeah. Oh, he's I remember being a teenager and coming out here when I was 17 and, you know, all of a sudden my dad saying, we're going to the studio today, which I went in the studio with him constantly. And he said, Smokey's going to be in there before us, so we'll go in before he gets out. And, you know, I got to hear him sing and meet him and stuff. And funny story, I really want to get this record to him. That's my next record. We're trying to get it to him now so he can listen to it, which won't be too bad. I've just been a little crazy since it's come out, but I definitely want him to hear my version. But, you know, it was always one of my best songs. I always thought Smokey was just a ridiculously great writer and a great singer.
Gosh.
And,
yes.
You know, just everything. I thought his lyrics were so... I always thought some of the lyrics to Motown songs were even better than people knew, because as much as we loved them, they still had a quality of what Barry wanted everything to sound like. And I think sometimes because of the productions of some of the songs, I think some people, because of the beat and the rhythms and how good they made us feel, I think we sort of lost how great the lyric writing was. And someone, not just my dad's songs, but Smokey's and Marvin's, everybody's, the lyrics were just really special.
Yes.
And so that lyric for me was a song I had to do, you know. But I do have a Smokey story that's very funny. I tell this in my show. I was at the airport with my sister, whose birthday it is today. And we were flying back from, so happy birthday, Julie. We were flying back from Phoenix because I went to visit her and she came to LA to do a job, and we were flying back on Southwest Airlines. And, you know, you stand in line with your ticket waiting to get, you know, on the plane. And there was Smokey in line, just like anybody else. And all these people were coming up to Smokey and, oh, my God, and trying to get his autograph, which everybody would. And Julie and I were just standing about 10 feet away. And he looked up and we waved. And he went, oh, my God, Julie, Mark. And he came over. Well, it was great to see him and talk to him. My dad had passed, and, you know, he had sent his condolences years before. But, he said, you know, sorry about your dad and stuff. And he came up to us. And so when we got on the plane, everybody was, like, looking at us like we were important. how do you guys know Smokey? Nah, you know, old friends. No big deal.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so. And, you know, you are right about the lyrical content of those songs. But here's the thing. When you are able to ingest, if you would, the lyrical content and know that more important than you being able to deliver the song correctly as far as the technical aspect is concerned, you wrap yourself around the song and you're able to convey the meaning, the intent of what the writer had in mind, you cannot teach that. That is something that is born into you, and Smokey has it, and guess what? You have it. You have it.
Well,
so
I think someone said to me once at a vocal symposium years ago, I was singing, you know, I think in a weird way it helped me to be an actor first before I became a singer.
And
to have my dad around, because if you screwed up my dad's lyrics or didn't interpret them right, he let you know.
Really?
So I think I was, yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can tell you stories about, I can tell you about stories about certain singers who sung my dad's songs who, like, change words and mess up stuff. He used to get furious. You know, he used to get furious at Sinatra, for singing "I Got You" under my, you know, "For Once in My Life." I got someone who needs me. And my dad would just scream when he heard that song. I have someone who needs me. I have.
Oh! Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I treated songs initially like monologues. And then the music came to me pretty easy as far as the rhythm and the feeling of the music. I think that's just inbred in sort of all of us. I mean, you know, it's the great universal language that makes us feel so beautiful, you know. But, you have to really know what you're singing about.
You do. And there's a particular way that this is what has been so wonderfully startling in hearing Soul Searching, which is the name of Mark Arthur Miller's EP, Soul Searching. It's just so fabulous to discover that there are these songs that we have all known, but when you do them, it's a whole different ball game.
Oh, thank you, baby.
it's just great, and I'm just going to shut up and let Mark Arthur Miller do the rest of the communication here from Soul Searching. This is the Tracks of My Tears on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Smile, it looks out of place. If you look closer, it's easy to trace the tracks of my tears. Since you left me, you see me with another girl. Seems like I'm having fun. Although she might be cute, oh, she's just a substitute. 'Cause you're my permanent one. So take a good look at my face. You see my smile, it looks out of place. If you look closer, it's so easy to trace. Oh, the tracks of my tears. I'm just a clown. Said you put me down. My smile is my makeup. I wear since my breakup with you.
You know, folks in the chat room are loving that. Loving it.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. Isn't that wild when you hear you back? I mean, do you get a chance to do this often?
No. You get to the point where you're listening so much in the mixing and the work of it and the stuff, and it's nice to hear again because, I'm already going forward and writing new stuff for the second half of the record, and it's so nice to hear back and go, wow, we did a pretty good job on that.
You really did. And then the extra touches. So of course I have to ask you about the arrangement. Did you have a large chunk of input? Did you have very clear-cut ideas about what kind of instruments you wanted to embellish the vocals, or how did that go?
Yeah, Peter Smith is my co-writer, my co-producer, my co-arranger, and he's a genius. He's a young, I say young, I've known him for so long, and he's just turned 40. And we're close friends now. We've known each other for about 7 years. But he's a jazz player out of New York, and he has two. I cannot not do the show without. He's got two albums that you have to hear, called "Here It Comes" and "Live Blues at Alva's" that are just so. You talk about wanting to check out a great jazz piano player. That's Peter. But I would come in with very specific. I mean, if you he even had a nice note that he wrote on the inside the album cover about. Our relationship as arrangers. That's why it's called arrangers. I came in with very specific ideas and bass lines and horn lines and violin lines and and then we would write and then rewrite stuff together to get it exactly the way we wanted. And I think truthfully for me, I love singing more than anything, obviously, but right behind that is the arrangements. I just love the work that we did on the arrangements together, because we'd sit down for hour after hour and just exactly what we wanted to convey, the message that we wanted to convey. And also, if you don't do these songs your own way, they've already been done so phenomenally by so many different artists.
Yes.
You can't copy anything, because if you copy anything, you're not giving it a new take and a new feeling. And that's what people want to hear if they're listening to these songs again.
You've got an excellent point there, Mark. Yes. And that doesn't get discussed enough, because there's an awful lot of artists out there with sizable egos who want to do songs and do them because they love them and they think that they can embellish on what was already perfection. But if you come from a different direction and say, okay, if I'm going to take on this song, I'm going to do it my way, because the song means that much to me and I have that much respect for the person who originated this song, that I want to do a different interpretation just so folks can enjoy the song all over again. You know?
Yeah, it's got it. I mean, but the other beauty about it is some songs are so great that you can do great things with it, even if you make it different, because you could, you know, they're just fabulous songs, so you can't ruin them. You know, it's hard to ruin Tracks of My Tears.
Contraire, Mark. Contraire.
Okay, No specific name.
Listen, you just have not been to the same clubs I've been. Some people have no right to be singing, first of all. And secondly, when they do, they need to stay away from those beloved songs that have meant the world to so many. You, because of your lineage, I mean, you are from royalty. So you not only had a father who fine-tuned these songs. And by the way, I just have to interject that Ron Miller also had a hand in Diana Ross's Touch Me in the Morning. Hello!
Yeah.
It's a chick thing. We just have to get it out there.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't mention it. I do that in my show as part of a medley of my dad's songs. So I would never ignore it. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's such a great song.
Well, you know, I would be interested in how you do that, because I would associate it with a woman, but to hear a man do it, that would be sexy.
Well, you know, it's a different time, though, Dave. You know, now men are sensitive and they can be brokenhearted about, you know, things happening like that, relationships ending.
Well, you want to tread...
Women can say those things like, you know, wasn't it you who said that nothing good was going to last forever? You know, women say that to men now. It's a different generation.
Yeah, right. Some people take that sensitivity thing a little far, and by the time all is said and done, the woman goes, oh, wow, I'm like looking at a mirror reflection of myself, and I wanted a man, actually. But that's a whole different kind of subject and a whole different show.
Yeah, exactly.
Woo! This is, it's so cool. And honest to goodness, I'm just looking now. There's a lot to look at, even though this is an EP, but you have a really cool insert inside. It's the jacket. And I'm losing my breath because, honestly, Mark, I hadn't noticed that you had Mr. Washington on saxophone for a few of these tracks.
Oh, Kamasi's ridiculous.
Kamasi Washington was one of the favorite musicians that George Duke ever worked with. Do you know that?
Wow. Yeah, and Kamasi's a pup, too. He's still young. He's ridiculous. He's, you know, and all the people on that record are ridiculous in their own right, and artists in their own right. I felt absolutely blessed to have those guys on my record. Absolutely.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
even had James Gadsden. I even had James Gadsden on My Girl's Just My Imagination play. And James I met when I James was drumming in my dad's sessions when I was 17 years old. So when we reintroduced ourselves, because I wanted him, you know, I had seen him, he was playing in one of Peter's gigs, and I reintroduced myself. He was like, oh my God, this is not you. Because I met him when I was 18, probably haven't seen him since then, maybe 20. You know, he was doing all kinds of Motown gigs for the Jacksons, my dad. You know, he was in all those studios all the time playing drums. So that was a blessing for me, too.
And how did that come together? Who, in a particular project like this, because you had been waiting to do this for a while, who makes the initiative? Who does the phone calls? Did you call? Did it all just happen organically? It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I will say that you know, John Stewart, who played most of the drums on the record, is a jazz drummer that I've known from Chicago. We're both from Chicago. I've known him for 30-something years. I won't even
wow.
I should stop there. Yeah, as kids, we know each other in Chicago. So we're like brothers, and then Peter and obviously. But Peter made a lot of the call on the musicians that I knew. I knew who all these guys were because I had seen them all. And so, you know, we chose basically who we thought would really, you know, be perfect on the gig. But as you know, there are so many great musicians everywhere, especially in Los Angeles and New York and Chicago. I mean, they're everywhere. That,
Nashville.
You know, yeah. You know, we could have gotten some other guys who would have been great, too. But it was so nice to get Kalazi because I knew he'd play, you know, he'd play the solo on People just exactly. I didn't even have to say a word. He played the feel that I wanted, you know, because sometimes jazz musicians can, if they get a song that is in a different vein, they can, you know, they can overblow, so to speak, because they're still doing jazz and it's not exactly what you need. And his solo to me was just absolutely perfect for the arrangement and the song on People.
Well, that's
I didn't even have to say a word. He just organically knew what to play.
Oh, well, look, you know, if he's working with Jeffrey Osborne, because he's on Jeffrey's CD, the Jazz Standards, essentially, CD, and
yeah,
with George, and if George is the musical director, let me tell you something, as much as George Duke was a teddy bear, an absolutely wonderful guy that I'm going to miss every single day until I pass from this earth, here's what else he was. He was a taskmaster who had you understand early on that if you were to learn something, he would teach to a certain extent, but he expected you to come in the next day and have it done. So he learned from the best. Kamasi did. Yes.
Well, those guys. I mean, I remember George seeing him with, you know, a friend of mine was Napoleon Brock, who played with George and Steve Vai, another friend of mine who played with Zappa back in the day, a long, long time ago. And George was like, you know, that group is, talk about precise.
Oh my gosh.
They were unbelievable.
Oh, <yeah. laughs>
they were unbelievable. Yeah.
And we remember, oh my God, this is terrible to even say, but Zappa came to D.C., Washington, D.C., quite a long time ago. And I know that George was with him, but I hardly remember the show.
Oh, I have a few of those.
It was fun, I know that.
And that is why we're drinking green drinks today.
You are correct about this. Yes, you are very right. And actually, even the steak that I alluded to, it's got to be organic, or it's got to be a certain kind of fed filet mignon. So let's make that perfectly clear in describing you.
I'm an organic filet mignon.
Yes, you are. You're a farm fed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, gosh. What fun it must have been to do this, too. How long, Mark, did you wait to get Soul Searching out there?
It probably took about, in total, about two and a half years for all the arrangements and stuff. And we have at least six, seven other songs that, thank God, are arranged now. So we're just, you know, we're working on a Kickstarter project to get back in the studio, hopefully in January, and get the rest of the record done. So then we'll re-release it as a full 12 or 13 song CD. With songs that I've written on there. It was songs that Peter and I have written, and then some other absolute soul standards. But I'm going to do My Dad's Heaven Help Us All with a great arrangement.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, respect that. That may be one of my favorite arrangements that we came up with of that song. So I can't wait to get in the studio and do work. And I can't wait to get in the studio and record some of my own songs, which is a thrill for me because I waited, you know, I don't know why, but I seemed to wait till my dad passed away before I started writing, and I think he'd be proud of what I've written. So
that's really something, and thank God that you had a chance to rekindle a relationship with your dad, and you were able to be with him in those last years, because, shoo, I really do think, and you probably have thought about this too, that a torch was passed, that you had the ability to reconnect with him and that he was supportive of you. He came to different places where you performed, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was so supportive. He, even from the time I, you know, reconnected with him when I was 17, you know, I mean, obviously there's always parent and children problems, and, you know, the years that we were apart, obviously we had to, you know, heal some wounds. But the one wound we never had to heal was my dad always made you feel like the next song that he had written was the greatest song that had ever been written. Even if it wasn't, he made you believe it was. And he also made you believe that your specific talent was the best talent on the planet, even if it wasn't. Even if it wasn't. So he, you know, he had that gift of making you feel special, you know. And
that's sweet.
He made, you know, and he made a lot of people feel special, you know, but he really did. So his belief and, you know, he knew me as an actor first. So a lot of the times when he first saw me, it was on stage doing a play. And when I started singing after my surgery, he knew I could sing. But all of a sudden he was like, when did you really start singing like this? I said, Dad, I had surgery. I said, no, I've been having a voice coach for years now, and I really been doing it. He goes, can you come in the studio and record a couple of my songs and demos? And so he started having me sing demos. But he was almost surprised as everyone else, you know.
Isn't that something? Oh, gosh. He really did. That's so amazing. He was able to express honest pride in what you were doing. And, you know, for a long time, he did not know that you were out there trying to make a living for yourself as an actor and then a singer. And to have had that, that was a gift for him before he passed, Mark, no doubt.
Yeah, no, he was very, very, very proud.
Oh, that's great. Well, I love anything that your dad had a hand in when he was at Motown, but this particular song is so special. You know I had to play If I Could, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course. Phew! You can't really say a whole lot about this song because the song really does say a lot.
Yeah. Oh. It was, you know, I still find it hard to sing this in public because it's hard to get through because, you know, it's about his kids. So it's, you know, it's a phenomenal song that everybody's recorded, Barbara, Ray Charles, and, you know, Celine Dion and everybody. But, you know, I had to do it because it's about his kids. So I'm one of his kids. So it's my right to record this song.
Absolutely. And just so authentic too. Mark Arthur Miller, If I Could, from Soul Searching on Hybrid Jazz. Listen.
If I could, I'd protect you from the sadness in your eyes, give you courage in a world of compromise. Yes, I would. If I could, I would teach you all the things I never learned, and I'd help you cross those bridges that I burned. Yes, I would. If I could, I would try to shield your innocence from time. But the part of life I gave you isn't mine. I watched you grow so I could let you go. If I could, I would help you make it through those hungry years. Though I know that I can never cry your tears. Oh, but I would. If I could. Yesterdays don't have to be your way. If I knew, I'd have tried to change this world I brought you to. But there really wasn't much that I could do. But I would.
Soul searching. Mark, I'm going to tell you something. You know, I completely understand that you are so unique in a couple of different ways. But I hope you don't mind if I perceive of you as another kind of consummate jazz singer. You have something in you that jazz singers were always supposed to have been taught, and they might have been taught that, but they forgot it. You have a particular way of wrapping yourself around a song, and you're always going to have that soulfulness inside of you because of your roots. But this is why it's just so comfortable to have you on this show. You certainly are a hybrid. You are that. It's the background information on you, the way that you grew up, who you had assimilated into you in the way of musical knowledge, and then through your teenage and then adult years. It's just really remarkable. How do people respond to you in a live situation? They must respond to you like they have never seen a live performer before.
Wow. Thank you. Everyone who knows me would probably tell you that I'm the most comfortable if you put me on stage in front of a lot of people. that's wow. that's the place where I'm the most comfortable. Even when I was a little kid. Yeah, I mean, even when I was a little kid. I mean, to say that I'm a ham is an understatement. You know, and it's not like a ham. I just, you know, I think from a very young age, I sort of knew that this is what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to get up in front of a lot of people and make them laugh and cry and feel something. That's just the way I've always felt it. And, you know, so my goal was just to do it well. You know, but I sort of felt like, wow, you really feel comfortable up here. Why is everybody so nervous when they get up in front of all these people? This is the most fun you can have other than sex, and probably sometimes even more than sex. You know, depending on who you're having sex with. But
yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, that's not, you know, people ask me, do I ever get nervous? And I say, yeah, I don't know if it's nervous or just I get very nervous to the point that I'm always nervous, have I done my work enough? Because if I do my work and really rehearse and really know what I want to convey, then I can have the freedom to get up on stage and then do that plus more, because you know you've put in the hours and put in the effort to then feel free. Just like sports, if you put in the repetition and do all the work, then you can, when you compete, you can just feel free about it. But I, you know, I'm anxious to get up on stage because then I get to just have fun. So I would think my live shows are probably better than my records.
Well,
you know,
look,
that's what I, because everybody listens to their recordings, and I don't know a singer who doesn't go, God, I wish I could have done one more take on that, you know, because we're all nitpicky about our own talents.
Oh,
you know,
definitely.
Yeah.
And you, see, people don't understand that when audiences come into any place where they can see live music and somebody who is singing, which is a whole lot more intimate than being in the group. Not to take anything away, because usually on this show there's a couple of instrumentals and then a vocal, because I really want to hear somebody play. But when you're in a live setting and you've got three or four pieces that are playing, you are being in a cohesive unit together. When somebody gets up in front of that band and then up in front of people to sing, that's another story. So if you are able to convey that you are so comfortable doing that, you put the audience at ease without saying a word. That's important.
Yeah. Well, I really believe that's important. I think I learned that as an actor, too, because as an audience member, I think we all, there's nothing worse than when you're feeling uncomfortable for the performer because the performer doesn't seem like they want to be up there. And then
exactly.
You're rooting for them so hard, but you feel their pain. I mean, you know, it's terrible. And if somebody comes out there like, this is the, I own this stage, then all of a sudden you can really just go, okay, great, I can breathe, and now I can feel what I need to feel. And that's what entertaining basically is about. It's more about letting the audience feel what they need to feel. And if you make them feel comfortable, then they open up and they let themselves do that.
Oh, you've given them such a gift when they're able to just exhale.
Exactly.
It's really tough for folks these days. You know, first of all, if they want to see you, it didn't used to be like this, Mark, because, you know, in some of our families, in the middle-class families, we actually had room in the budget for recreation and vacations.
Yeah.
So now when they people come to see you, some of them have actually saved a little bit to come to see you. It means a lot to them. This is their escape. And you are intuitive enough to realize that, and you permit yourself to have a ball on the stage, which is like a double whammy. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're doing it, I think that should be the number one thing about it, you know, is that you're having fun, and then everything else is based around that. But if you're not having fun doing it, there's something wrong.
Oh my gosh.
I think music, you know, I always said I love being an actor, but I don't love it as much as singing. To me, there's something so universal about the music, and it just, it always seems to take me someplace different that I never knew it was going to take me during live performances. And that is so exciting that it's just, you know, it's like I know where we're supposed to go, but then the magical places that we go to, because you have all these musicians attached to it and, you know, sort of interconnected, and then you go, wow, it went here. So there are times in my show where I have a silly as a grin on my face, because it's like, wow, did we actually do that?
And Susan, of course, I would remember this, but Susan Zenk is in the chat room, and she just put it out there, Catalina Bar and Grill, October 15th, Mark Arthur Miller.
I love it. Please show up. We're gonna once again, we almost tore the roof off the place in August, and we're going to, because it's still attached, so we're going to actually try and complete that job on Tuesday.
That is so awesome. And you know, oh my gosh, Mark, I'd want to be there so badly, because that's the day before my birthday. Can you imagine?
I know. I'm going to send you birthday kisses, girl, from the stage the night before.
You know what? I'll feel them. you know, is there any possibility, I wonder, because so many clubs are doing this, it would be insanely awesome to have this broadcast live.
Oh God, I wish. You know what? We're gonna have to absolutely work on that real soon.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm gonna actually figure out a way to look into that, because hopefully, you know, every cross your fingers, dot your T's. I just from the last show, I just got signed with KMT Artists, a great managing booking firm. So we're trying to get me back in Chicago for a CU release concert in Chicago, hopefully in April. I'm not going to give anybody specific dates, but when that locks itself in, maybe we'll see about figuring out a way to get it live broadcast on your show. That would be pretty interesting.
It would be awesome. And you can imagine, seriously, once the word gets out about that, the United Kingdom audiences, look at me, I can't even talk. The audiences there will go crazy, because they really appreciate this kind of sound in the UK, as they do in Japan. So you make sure you focus on those two particular places in order to spread the word about your music. We'll help, though, hon.
No,
we'll help.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you so much. Because that is a big part of the plan. Because, you know, like so much great jazz that is loved other places more than it's loved in our own country, which is a criminal in my opinion. But you know what? If they love us, we'll just go there. You know. So.
Oh, look, let me tell you something. One of the funniest things I ever heard, Bobby Caldwell was on the show some months ago.
Great, my gosh.
Wow. It was just like you and me, that kind of connection that Bobby and I had. In Japan, they call Bobby, who is the king of everything, by the way, over there. They call him Mr. AOR. Which, for the uninitiated, means album-oriented rock.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that crazy? But they don't care what it's called. They just love him, and by God, they pay for his music.
And they should.
Yes.
Because he's ridiculous. I mean, he's a ridiculous singer. I mean, he's so great. And, you know, again, you wonder. There's so many people you wonder. And this is the people that we're seeing on television and YouTube every day. And these are the people we're not seeing on television and YouTube every day.
Exactly. And do you know what? This is so awesome. You might not know this, or you might. And depending on how you feel about the song, you know the song by Peter Cetera and Amy Grant, Next Time I Fall?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you know who wrote that?
Who?
Bobby Caldwell.
Oh, my God. Wow. I should have known that. Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more than meets the eye. And see, you and Bobby have a couple of similarities, because if you're looking on the surface, it's already good. But if you dig deeper, you're going to go, wow, after wow, after wow, because you just, there's so much to you, and there's history involved. And another thing that you have to do, actually a couple of things, you've talked about Smokey Robinson. Smokey, as far as I know, was signed to a record label a few months ago.
Wow.
So this is a good time for you to get in touch with Smokey. You wanted to do that anyway. That's number one.
Yeah,
number
absolutely.
Two, if you still want to do your acting thing, Dave King, the name might ring a bell or not. He and I used to work together on QVC, the network. Dave went on to be involved in acting and then on the MSNBC shopping network. Now he's involved full-time in acting, and he's got regular gigs on primetime network TV shows. So you and he, now he's living in California, you and he need to hook up.
Okay. I will definitely do it. I'm writing as you speak.
Okay, good. Just making these connections. Collecting commissions later, just so you know.
Yes, absolutely. They're already in my will.
I love it. Well, this is going to be so cool. Catalina Bar and Grill, October 15th. Where can folks get tickets? A couple of different places they can go. Tell us.
Well, you can get, the number you can get is 323.
Right.
466-2210. That's for reservations. And you go on the website, which is CatalinaBarGrill.com, you know, CatalinaJazz.com, or I'm sorry, CatalinaJazzClub.com, and you can get tickets online that way also.
CatalinaJazzClub.com, okay.
Club.com, yeah. And the doors open at 7 for dinner and drinks, and the show's at 8:30.
And what is the cover charge to get in?
The cover is $20.
The cover's $20.
Plus, yeah, that's yeah, plus that's you know dinner or drinks, whatever. Yeah.
And that's the way to do it.
I will play so much music that it'll be worth the ticket. We give them a lot for their dollar. We never like to stop.
Well, look, if you're going to talk about that, let us just say this: people need to be aware of the fact that everybody else needs to eat, and so are the people who are up on stage singing and performing for you. $20 for a cover charge is wonderful, and yes, put on your big boy girl pants and make sure that you have dinner too, because that's what we as adults have to do in order to support one another. So please, don't you ever make any apology, I'll come and smack you.
Okay, I promise. I won't. No, it's like, you know, but get dressed up, put that tie on, put that slick outfit on, because, you know, during the show, you can get out of your seat and get up and dance a little bit. You know, I do some of those old grind songs, you know, how we used to dance where we got up real close and stuff. Because I want people to love the show and then go home and get busy, too, because that's part of what the show is about. Like we've been in the old days, too. You know, we went to hear live music and then we got home and we put on more records and had one last nip before we went to bed. And then we took our mate and we said, wow, what a great night. Let's continue this. So that's part of the music too.
That's right. Who are you going to have with you? Can you say?
Yes, I can say. The band is Peter Smith, my music director on piano and so many other instruments and clav and all kinds of great stuff. And I have John Stewart on drums and Nate
great.
Light on bass. Chris Vasquez, a great young guitar player. William Artipe on trumpet and Zane Musa, another great saxophone player. And I have two magnificent singers in their own right. One is Maya Sykes, who's got a record out now and part
wow.
of a band of her own. And she is a, you got to check Maya Sykes because she is a force of nature. I mean, she's
ooh.
Ridiculous. And Laura Mace. And she's ridiculous. And they're my background singers. We also do duets. We do a couple of Marvin, Tammy things, and, you know, with our own arrangements.
Oh.
We sort of tear it up that way. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's a joy for me to sing with them because they're out of this world. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
you just gave me
a
chill.
They make an old man feel young. Yeah, they make an old man feel young.
You listen, let me tell you something. You are GQ. You just have to face facts that you are a handsome and a sexy and a different kind of artist, because look, you're a throwback to what was great back in the day, and then you are bringing all of these songs that were great back in the day to life, and then you add your own dimension to it. So this is why you're so multi-freaking faceted.
And Trish Hennessy has just been hired as Mark Arthur Miller's new press agent.
The multi-freaking faceted Mark Arthur Miller.
Oh, I love that. Are you that?
Oh, my gosh.
Beautiful.
Woo! And so are you. And you know, of course, what I saved for the third song.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. My version of a male stripper song.
This is certainly a pole dancing song, and even Michael Jackson would appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, he was you know, a god, Michael. I mean, he was such a...
Oh,
I saw him when I was 12 years old, and he was 11. And already then you went, oh, my God. So, you know, I had to do a Michael song, but obviously you can't do it like Michael. So, you know, I did a little more grown-up version.
Oh, I'll say. And at this point, this is where we pass the towels around in the chat room. So, ladies, look, I know that it's been a little difficult for you to hold back, and I know that you were waiting for this song, but this is the song. Didn't you say that this is getting, like, the push to possibly be a single?
Yeah, and you never know what's going to be. You know, I sort of just loved the song in my head. I loved it, obviously, the way he did it, but in my head I loved, you know, what I wanted to do with it to sort of, but I never knew it would get this much attention. Maybe, you know, you go, wow, okay, that's how they feel about it. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Look, there's even a scenario running through my active imagination where there is a movie, and in the movie there's a pivotal scene where somebody does a strip to this. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Direct that thing. Yeah, we'll work on that. Direct that thing.
You know what? I could.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubt about that, lady.
Well, look, this is, it's just hard to say goodbye to you. It's hard.
Oh, no. You too.
Yeah.
I've had so much fun. Could... Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, you are so welcome. It's a pleasure. And once again, Susie Z, thank you so much for hooking us up. When you've got this Kickstarter campaign going on, let's have you back so we can push this thing, okay?
I would love to do that. We're getting on that right away, so I would love to do that. That would be amazing if we could do that. That would be so great.
Well, I'm completely game for that, and of course we'll be ongoing in our communication. So you
let
me know, and if we have to figure on a couple of different dates, well, so be it.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you so much. You are an angel, and this show is a blessing to so many people. So thank you for doing it.
Oh, thanks, Mark. I appreciate
that. Great.
Well,
yeah.
You were my 6 days ahead of time birthday gift, so I was glad that we were able to arrange this. And please tell Sister Julie happy birthday from everybody in the chat room and me.
I will. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, too. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Mwah.
Mike Arthur Miller, and get ready. If you have not heard this particular track from Soul Searching, every single one of these tracks, and by the way, we didn't play the version of People that Mark does. Let me just say this. You have to buy the EP in order to hear it. He also does Otis Redding's Dock of the Bay that was written by Otis and Steve Cropper. He also does My Girl and Just My Imagination Together. But this is the one that we heard first thing, and we had to redress ourselves afterwards. The Way You Make Me Feel on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Hey, pretty baby, with your high heels on, you give me fever like I've never ever known. You're just a product of loveliness. I like the groove of your walk, your talk, your dress. I feel your fever from miles around. Can I pick you up in my car and we'll paint the town? Just kiss me, baby, and tell me twice that you're the one for me, the way you make me feel. You really turn me on. You knock me off of my feet, yeah, baby, you do. My lonely days are giving me. Just hold me, baby, and I'm in ecstasy. Oh, I've been working, 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 girl, from 9 till 5 to buy you things to keep you by my side. I never felt so in love before. Just promise me, baby, that you love me forevermore. I swear I'm keeping you satisfied, 'cause you're the one for me, the way you make me feel. You really turn me on. You knock me over my feet, yeah, baby. My lonely days are gone. No more lonely tonight. come over amaze me. Cause I just can't get enough of you now. Are gone.
So men are lazy, so men are slow, but those
was I going to follow Mark Arthur Miller with. When I was putting together the show, I thought, let's just follow him with something instrumental. But no, the flavor of the chat room has taken such a different turn that collectively I thought for the betterment of all, we should follow that with something that was kind of sexy from a female point of view. What on earth do you think Marianne McCall was talking about when she said she wants a man to come to work on time? She's not talking about punching the time clock, ladies and gentlemen. Am I making myself clear? Marianne McCall was a Philly girl. Back in the day, born in 1919. And she passed away in 1994 in Los Angeles. Very intriguing gal. Pop music, vocal jazz. She sang for Tommy Dorsey and Woody Herman's bands. She was married for a short time to Al Cohn. And she won the Downbeat Reader's Poll for Girl Singer with Band in 1949. She didn't necessarily become successful in the ways that we knew. She became a bartender in a bar called the 49er in L.A. that was on Hollywood Boulevard and Western Avenue in the 70s, and they featured nude dancers, and it catered to a lesbian and gay crowd, and she would sing, and she would amaze everyone, straight or gay. She just had this outgoing personality, and like a lot of different folks who were, you know, at one time well spoken of and played and just revered. She didn't necessarily end the way that she began. She ended her career by playing jazz in airport bars at LAX. And, you know, it just is so great to be able to play a song by her, because that voice not only is glorious, but it also gives me a chance to tell you that Joanna Pascal is supposed to be with us, hopefully at the bottom of the hour, but we'll see when she comes out of class at Temple University. She's teaching a class. So, yeah, when you hear Joanna sing, we've not played a song by Joanna on this show. Getting her music was a little tricky, but we were able to get some music. If you go to Amazon, you're going to have to order and then maybe back order, because that's how amazing she is. She is also a Philadelphia gal, by the way. So it's going to be a treat. She's here, and we're doing the show at a special time today because Joanna has to go off to a gig tonight. She really couldn't do the show teaching and doing the gig earlier in the day. And the St. Michael's Jazz Festival is coming up starting tomorrow. Joanna will be there. Beautiful place, St. Michael's, which is essentially an island in Maryland. And there are some high-profile politicians in the D.C. area of both parties who go there and live there. So it's going to be quite the spectacle this weekend. Who shows up at this St. Michael's Jazz Festival? So Joanna is right there. Let us play something that will pave the way for Joanna. I'm trying to think of what I can do to serve her justice. We have just heard Mark Arthur Miller, and I'm still sweating. So I'm thinking that maybe this might be good. If we play McCoy Tyner, an extended little piece, so Mama Bear can catch her breath. This is back from 1995 with Michael Brecker and company, the McCoy Tyner Trio. And actually, it's a pretty cool song because the time is 10:16, which is my birthday. 10 minutes and 16 seconds, Flying High on Hybrid Jazz. We'll be right back. had to play something special. Woo! You know why? Here's the thing. Now, you've heard, many people who have heard this show know that I sometimes wax poetic about different artists. But this particular lady is something special. So what else could I do but play the McCoy Tyner Trio with Michael Brecker in front of introducing her? When I saw her on stage last year around Christmas time, she was with a Tim Warfield Christmas show, so that was already going to be good. I had no idea that Joanna was going to be part of this. I just came in because I thought, oh, great musicians. Then this woman came up to sing, and I don't know where I was. I think I lost consciousness, seriously, because I got thrown back in time so much. Philadelphia flashed in front of me. My childhood memories from listening to WIP, the songs that they used to play of years that were before the 60s. This woman has been reincarnated as somebody else. You have never heard anyone in your life in the guise of this beautiful female form singing a song and making you want to be transported. You will be, but there's a yearning that comes over you when you hear Joanna Pascal sing that is unlike anything that I know of. And now, ladies and gentlemen, now that I have totally befuddled her, here she is, Joanna!
Hey, wow. I mean, can it just be stated that I didn't pay you to say that? But I totally would.
Oh, let me tell you something.
Thank you. Thank you. You have no idea how much that means to me.
Well, look, in doing research about you, the way that this emotional connection is even more so is that you feel so strongly about making sure that people understand the importance of the lyric. That's so urgent.
Oh, yeah.
God bless you.
I think that's, for me, that is the biggest attraction to the music is the lyrics and the story and finding the story within the story. It's funny, I just got finished teaching a class at Temple, and you know, that was one of the things we were talking today, and I brought in a standard, and you know, I'll read the lyrics of the class, and I'll ask them, you know, what is the story about? And it's really funny because, you know, some kids will say, oh, it's a happy song, and some kids will say, it's a sad song. And what I love about the Great American Songbook is that no one's wrong. You know, the way that the lyrics are written is just that they're open for interpretation. And that, to me, is the most exciting thing about the music, is to really take a look at that and find my connection to the lyric, find my connection to the story, and then allow that to direct, you know, my interpretation of the song. So,
see, that takes something special for you to even consider that, because you place yourself in a secondary motion when you view it that way. And there are some artists that don't understand the significance of this, because when you actually have the humility to understand the greatness of what has gone before, you're allowing yourself for the song to envelop you. And that's what you do.
And I think that's truly the only way that one can continue to evolve these songs and make them different, you know, because you are dealing with repertoire that has been recorded a lot. And, I mean, for me, I'm just attracted to this period, you know, of songwriting. It's just, there's something so subtle in the story and in the way things are phrased. It speaks of a simpler time, you know, and honestly, that's really the only way that I've found to find myself in the music. And, you know, I think as a younger student of the music, I would have this pressure of how can I make this different? How can I make this my own? And I have just found that that's truly the only way. And once I realized that it was as simple as just connecting myself to the material, then all the pressure was off, and I really started to just enjoy, you know, singing and interpreting lyrics and telling stories. And, you know, truthfully, I love the fact that you made that Philadelphia connection the first time you heard me, because that's what I grew up listening to, and that's how I learned, and that was what all the great singers and instrumentalists were doing around me. So, you know, the fact that I might be continuing that part of the tradition, it means a lot to me that you're getting that. If you're getting that, then that's all I can really hope and aspire for in this music.
Well, here's something that's even stronger than that, and I have to brace myself when I say this, but I didn't know a whole lot about you. I hadn't done research. So what I thought of without having known so much about you was I went back to such a place that I remembered that Billie Holiday was born in Philadelphia, and you sang, and I made the connection of Billie Holiday.
Wow. Well, she was actually the first person that I ever heard. It was funny because I was just a dramatic kid, and, you know, I guess kind of quirky. But I can remember watching TV with my mom one day, and I heard there was this woman, and she was singing and playing piano, and she was singing Good Morning Heartache. And it just stopped me dead in my tracks. And I just connected to the song. I was probably 13. And I said to my mom, I was like, oh, my God, like, what is that song? And she said, that's an old Billie Holiday tune. And I said, who's he? And it was just so ironic that next day, the Diana Ross Lady Sings the Blues was on TV.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was just all about Billie Holiday's life. And I just begged my mom to take me to the CD store to buy me, well, at that time it was cassettes, to buy me, you know, Billie Holiday. And she did. And she really supported me from the beginning of it. And it's kind of ironic because her father, my grandfather, who had passed away before I was born, was an amateur jazz singer. And I never knew that. And so it was really strange to her that I was making this connection and gravitating towards this, you know, genre of music that was, you know, we had this connection and we had never met. And in spite of her being very religious and sort of trying to gear me away from secular music, she really let me jump right in. And I can remember, you know, I wore those tapes out. I just played them over and over and over again. And I mean, they're really how I learned the standards. And Billie Holiday led to, you know, Sarah Vaughan, and Sarah Vaughan led to Jimmy Scott, and Jimmy Scott led to Johnny Washington. And it, you know, I really just self-discovered a lot of it until, you know, I started to, you know, study formally. And I learned this music like it was the pop music of my generation. I was just that in love with it immediately. It was like this illicit love affair. I would lock myself in my room and just, you know, like, I couldn't think about anything else. Like, I couldn't do anything else except just play the music over and over and over again. And it was just, I was passionate about it, you know, as much then as I am now.
It's so funny. You definitely are. I'm not quite sure about calling you an old soul because you are. I'm way older than you, but you know what I mean. You do. You have this unique vibe about you, and there is no way that somebody who is listening to you is going to feel any other way than saying, "Ooh, she is a throwback to a different generation." So, Joanna, I would have expected through the years while you're doing this and you're performing this music, there have been some older cats that have reached out to you and have thanked you because you probably remind them of what was great back in the 40s and 50s.
Well, I think, you know, and it kind of gets tricky, too, because you don't want – Yeah, I mean, there's so many people who will come up and just be really grateful that I'm maintaining the tradition, and for a while it was difficult for me to sort of find that fine line between preserving and keeping intact like all of the qualities that I loved and admired about this music, but then what next? How do I then just not become, you know, this record player, you know, of just spewing out these songs, but then how do I take them and make them my own? And that's where I've gotten a lot of support from people, you know, and thank God for the people around me who are always very honest, sometimes brutally honest, you know, as I was taking chances and trying different things. But the fact remains is that I think the one thing is it's a singer needs to tell a story. A singer, you know, my tool and my instrument is lyrics. And, and so I think as long as I've been true to that, I've been the most fulfilled. And that's when I truly do get, I think, the most positive feedback from older people. Because they, you know, songwriting is just different now than it was then. I did this project with the Kimmel Center a couple years ago, and my idea was, you know, because I'm in jazz education now, I'm teaching at Temple and University of Penn, and oftentimes I find that, you know, we're teaching the kids all these standards as a way to qualify them, you know, for their degree, and oftentimes it's like they're learning the information very formulaically in a practice room, and there's a disconnect. So I had this idea to, I wanted to interview seniors and talk to them about some of the songs that were impacted to them, maybe their first dance or, you know, the songs that had a special meaning. And it was really interesting because you forget that music was pop music of their generation, you know. And once we started to sort of pick their brains and get into their memories, and the kids could see, you know, that some of these songs that we're learning, you know, in class actually set the soundtrack to their lives, it started to open them up to the songs more, and it started to get them to think a little differently, but more importantly, cool. I think it got them to start to feel. And I think that's the most important thing is that emotion and that feel in the song. And you know, I think that's what I want in a singer. You know, that's what I want in any musician. I want them to make me feel something.
Well, here's the thing, and this rarely gets discussed, but you have set the tone for this particular comment. What these kids don't understand, and it's so sad, we grew up in a world in which there was such a thing as courtship. And the songs that you sing, the songs that were near and dear to us as we were children growing up, were the songs that had a yearning for romance, a yearning for someone who may have been not available, a wistfulness.
You better preach,
Trish. Oh, my God.
You know, there's a tenderness.
Oh, a tenderness, and there is real love involved. As opposed to falling in bed and not having any foundation for that physical act to come into play when there's no emotional connection made to begin with. So this is really lovely.
Yeah, there's a fragility that kind of hangs in the air with some of these lyrics. I mean, you're just, they're stunning and they sparkle and they're so earnest. You know, there's just something about some of them. You're just putting your heart on the line, and that's not something that you find, you know, in most relationships with people today.
My God! and people wonder, and it's so sad. If people were to go back and listen to the songs that were made from yesteryear as part of this Great American Songbook that we have, I mean, you know, you and I have talked about your previous efforts through my eyes when Lights Are Low and what you did with Anthony Wansi, which was so great. If people would delve into one of those CDs, buy them all, preferably, if they would, they would feel a new kind of slant in their lives so that maybe they wouldn't feel so confused and feel as if they were adrift after they've gone to bed with the umpteenth person and that person has left their lives. They don't understand that they have actually given away part of themselves, and there's no memories attached. The memories are everything.
Right.
God. Oh, we could go on for another 45 minutes. You know, and that's the charm of this beautiful music, that people would be so inclined as to announce his, in particular a man, announce a love for a woman, maybe an unrequited kind of love, or the chance, the respect that was there. That's another key component of this, Joanna, the respect.
You're right. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Oh, God. How much time do you have, by the way? When do you have to go?
I have time. I have some time. So
I'll let
you know when I got to go.
Okay.
I have to perform tonight. And so it's like this is my drive home where I race home to just feed my dog and give her like a squirt. Nope, she doesn't like eat me.
Poor thing.
And then I have to run out the door, and then I sing tonight. So it's just today was a sort of a hectic day, but I'm loving talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Oh my God, thank you for wanting to be here. And Fred Hughes is in our chat room, by the way, Joanna.
Oh, hey Fred.
Hey Fred, and thank God for Fred because he was the one who said, "Look, you've tried to reach out to Joanna. Let's see if we can get a better hookup." So he gave me your email address, and thank goodness
he's
Saint Michael's.
I'm really looking forward
to
playing with him. I know
he is remarkable, and you talk about a background of his. He is such a treasure on piano. I've seen him do his thing live, too. So beautiful. And the Saint Michael's Jazz. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And this is actually the first time we're getting to work together. So I'm really, really excited about this.
Oh, good. Oh, gosh. And the people involved. First, the people who are going to come to Saint Michael's to see the Jazz Festival are going to be wonderful. And secondly, because they'll be real attentive. And secondly, the people that are playing are phenomenal. So I'm just happy for you.
And Amy Shook is probably one of my favorite people on the planet. I mean,
this girl
can play the bass. and honestly, she's one of the few female musicians, you know, that I'm fortunate enough to play with. And so it's just always special. It's, you know, I'm not around enough women. You know what I'm saying? So anytime I get to play with her and to just sit and talk and be girls, it's a lot of fun.
She is absolutely amazing. And she's got to be, for heaven's sake, because she was invited to the White House to perform twice. So she's that good. And you're right. There is something really special about her. But I want people to hear you. And now that we have sort of set the tone for the discussion of the music, what do you feel led for us to play? Because I've got all four of the songs that are near and dear to you that you wanted to delve into. So which one do you feel right now?
How about Wouldn't It Be Loverly?
That would be great. And that would be the suggestion because it really does spell out a lot of what we just said. Oh, yeah.
A little, you know, slightly bawdy in a very subtle way.
Yeah. And it's not just Eliza Doolittle, ladies and gentlemen. It's still a refrain that we have after all these years. This is from Joanna Pascal's 2008 Through My Eyes project, Wouldn't It Be Loverly, on Hybrid Jazz.
Wouldn't is a room somewhere far away from the cold night air, with one enormous chair. Wouldn't it be lovely? Lots of chocolate for me to eat. Lots of cold, making lots of heat. Warm face, warm hands, warm feet. Wouldn't it be lovely?
Ladies and gentlemen, let us just point out to you that that is just one of over 400-plus songs in the repertoire of Joanna Pascal. Woo! Girl, never heard the song like that before. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Man, just feeling it in a whole different way. this time
well,
around.
Thing,
because
you know, it's picking the lyrics apart and taking them word by word and what do they really mean? What's the story within the story? You know, and letting that change and direct the feel. I think, you know, that's what I'm trying to do.
And honestly, you know, men yearn to hear these songs. And I told you the story in our little private tete-a-tete over regular email. I had an ex-boyfriend who took your albums with him. And I finally got the nerve up to call him one day and say, what? You took my Joanna Pascal music. So what is the story?
Oh, man.
He said,
well,
she
I will
just
send
got in.
You the new one.
Oh, no. I didn't mean to do that, but he said because she got into my skin and I couldn't let her go.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's what you do so well. And the cool thing is that whatever the circumstances are of you finding the folks around you who get you, you have these formidable musicians who take delight. I saw the chemistry with you and everybody else on stage at Jazzway last year. You pop these guys in such a way that they take delight all over again in their music because they know you get it. That's so cool.
Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, that's ultimately, I think, what art, you know, especially in music should be about. It's a collaboration and an understanding and acceptance of one another and being able to listen and communicate. And I think I have been really fortunate. I mean, I was born in Philly, was raised in Philly, and I've worked here. And, you know, so I'm around people who know me very well, and they know how seriously I take the music and especially, you know, my interpretations of things. And they really respect that, and they really try and really create that backdrop for me to tell the story. And, you know, I see them. You know, there's some times where I think, for me, what I'm attracted mostly to is feels, you know, for songs and tempos and things like that. And sometimes I struggle with trying to articulate things because it's not in a tangible sense that I'm explaining. You know, it's I'm trying to describe a certain feeling, and I just see them just give me 100% of their concentration and really trying to help me to give me what I need in order to bring that sound that I'm hearing to fruition. And I respect them, and I could not do what I do without them. You know, we really go hand in hand.
Well, this is so funny. Mark Miller, who was on with me previously before you came on, Mark Arthur Miller is a singer and a writer and an actor in Los Angeles. And his dad mm-hmm. was Ron Miller, who wrote all those great Motown songs, a lot of them.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's really funny because one of the songs that Mark's dad wrote was Touch Me in the Morning. And
oh,
you
wow.
just talked about Diana Ross. So Mark just got in the chat room, and he wants you to know, he actually said, Joanna, that song was delicious.
Thank you.
It's so amazing how people respond. I love the fact that now new people are going to know you. And the word of mouth is so awesome. It has to be, especially in your circumstances, because Philadelphia's got a certain kind of vibe, doesn't it, Joanna? I don't know what it is like.
Does.
Yeah. It's I miss it so much being in Baltimore now. There's such a different kind of energy in Philadelphia. Tell me, how is the jazz scene or music scene now? Does it make you feel comfortable? Do you find yourself in a midst of changes as far as venues are concerned? What's it like now?
Well, I mean, I think we always are hopeful for more places to play and more venues. I mean, the thing that I can say is I've managed to make a career for myself here. You know,
yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to do the Lowe's Hotel 3 nights a week for 10 years. So that's
wow.
sort of, you know, an institution that's unheard of. Unfortunately, they're actually closing to renovate the space, so I'm not sure what's going to happen going forward, but I am looking forward to an opportunity to get out of town a little bit more. I think this has sort of anchored me here a little more than I had initially hoped for my career, but nevertheless, I mean, that, like, with that I say there are places, maybe they're not, traditional music venues, but there's a lot of venues that have music, and I think there's a lot of people who are committed to this music and in their presentation of it, and, you know, there's some really beautiful spaces, Philadelphia Art Museum and the Kimmel Center, and certainly with the Avenue of the Arts, and, you know, some of the clubs that we have here, Chris's and Ortlieb's, and there's a lot of places. You know, I think a lot of times, like, Philly musicians like to complain about, you know, the scene, but I think the other thing too is, you know, there's a lot of people here who are creating the scene. You know, they're finding venues, they're making it happen, and so that's what's kind of nice about, you know, blue collar town. It's like you got people working for the good of the people, and I am optimistic of it, and like I said, you know, being a teacher now, I see my students, you know, I see them going out and performing and coming to the gigs and checking this one out and checking that one out. And so I kind of, you know, can have my ear to the ground on what's going on and, you know, the newest places. And I think that, you know, it is a good city to learn and to grow. And, you know, you still have a lot of older musicians who, you know, are still here, who are happy to offer advice, who are happy to listen to you, who are happy to play with you. And so it's been a really nice place to sort of, like, kind of cocoon myself, you know, into
immersing
myself into a style or a sound. I think as opposed to, you know, some people, they just kind of go off and their sound doesn't sound rooted in anything. And that's why I have to say, I got such a kick out of that day that we met and you said that to me, because I'm very proud to be from Philadelphia. I'm very proud to be part of this lineage and this long list of musicians, and to be associated with that is, I mean, I feel like I can go anywhere in the world and be proud of who I am and where I come from and what I've learned. And
I hear you. Oh my gosh! Listen, I mean, I'm a Temple University girl too. I remember going. Yes. Oh my God! I mean, North Philly train station. I was there every day, and you know, I love those guys who had the trucks outside. If they still do, that's fabulous. But
the trucks have gotten crazy. I mean, it's probably the best time on campus. Oh my God.
Those trucks were something else, because everybody was competing for the best food, so you got some really good food. And the whole vibe, and it was just different then, because I'm talking about like in the 70s, the early 70s for me. But even then, I knew that with the wealth of music that just living in Philadelphia, you breathe in. Honestly, we had the best radio stations when I was growing up because we had AM and FM that was playing an absolute plethora of music. You remember? Holy cow.
Oh, Sid and Mark, PEN, Sound of Sinatra, WRTI. And then not to mention, just, I mean, even the top 40 stations at the time were always great.
They really were, and the greatest, I think, among them, besides WIBG on AM, was WIP, 610, which is now a sports station, because you could hear everything from Ella Fitzgerald, Frank Sinatra, Jack Jones. It would jump from jazz to pop to blues, but it was all considered just part of the middle-of-the-road format. It was wonderful. Man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very close to Bob Craig, who's one of the DJs at WRTI, and also Bob Perkins, and it's great to sit with them and hear about, you know, the history of radio, because that's something that I didn't always know too much about. Those guys are just they have so many stories, and it really was its own institution as well, you know?
Listen, let me tell you something. When I got involved in radio in 1976, there was a lot of discrimination against women, as you might suspect. So,
no.
Yeah. So, you know, those stories in Philadelphia, the rich musical backdrop that we can call our own is something that can't be taken away. And then here you are last year at Jazzway. You're opening your mouth to sing. And first of all, I was in love with your shoes, so I was looking at them for like a full 5 minutes. And then
I think I remember what I had on, too.
You had green shoes.
Yeah, they were green patent leather platforms. I had just had them shipped from Italy.
Wow.
The only thing I love as much as standards is shoes, but that's a whole other show.
I completely understand. So I was just immersed in thinking, this girl's got good taste, first of all. And then you're singing, and I'm telling you the truth. Everybody in the chat room, you are witnessing this. I was smelling the Italian food cooking in South Philadelphia, first of all. I was smelling that. And I'm riding along in the train. I'm driving, from Fox Chase to Philadelphia. I'm passing Sigma Sound. So I'm flashing that. I'm hearing Billie Holiday and what her life must have been like before she made the move to Baltimore. All of this stuff is coming to me and all these childhood memories. And I'm like a dope. I'm weeping in front of Joanna Pascal because she thinks that she's singing a Christmas song, and she's probably thinking, why is this chick crying? It was just like that, though. Man, so overwhelming.
No, just to hear that, I mean, it just validates everything that I'm doing, and that's enough for me, you know. And I sincerely, I can't thank you enough for that day of you coming up and sharing that story with me, and for, you know, having me on the show. I feel like you're my kindred spirit. We're kindred spirits.
We are, because we believe in the same things, although we didn't know it at the time. You do everything that an artist who is humble and who is in tune with herself does. The fact that you would allow yourself to take a back seat so that the music can shine, that's part of the healing that goes on, Joanna, when an audience sees you, because they know it's not about you, and you're allowing them to get inside of you. So that means more than any gift you could possibly gift. Seriously.
Thank you.
Welcome. Man, does this mean you're going to go now?
I do have to go.
Okay.
I can feel her. She knows I'm sitting outside the house in the car.
Oh my God.
My poor puppy. She's ready.
You've got more than one. How many do you have?
Oh, I just have one.
Just one? So what is your puppy's name?
Her name is Chi-Chi. She's a pit bull rescue. Had her for a couple years. She's amazing. She's famous in the neighborhood. I mean, she's definitely more the superstar of the family.
Oh, that's so cute. She's a pit bull rescue. Well, I'm going to play a song for Chi-Chi and for you.
Okay.
I'm going to close out with For Heaven's Sake, because
I love that song.
You do, and it shows in every fiber of your being when you sing it. So thank you, and hopefully
you.
I'll see you Saturday.
Oh, I'd love to see you. That'd be awesome.
That would
Thanks,
be
Tracy.
Really awesome.
Thank you so much. Take
thank
care.
You.
Touch.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Joanna Pascal. Oh, my gosh. So nice. So nice that she was able to take the time to call. This song is from Joanna Pascal and Anthony Wansey, Play the Great American Songbook. I had not been real familiar with the song, and now I don't want to hear it from anybody else. There is a particular kind of vibe that a female singing this song and the lyrical content of this with the tenderness that she has, I'm going to cry. This is like 6 minutes and 18 seconds. Enjoy. Joanna Pascal, For Heaven's Sake.
Once in my take-for-granted world, love was so commonplace. Now I see an enchanted world in your face, in your embrace. For heaven's sake, thank you.
This is Hybrid Jazz.
song, whew, that song is just so good that I can't even say. And look, when music has been part of your world since the late 60s, early 70s, you know that if somebody says that song is good, they mean it. Before is the name of the musical project by Brian Auger and the Trinity. Gary Winston Boyle on lead guitar and vocals, David Ambrose on bass, Clive Thacker on drums and percussion, and Brian Auger on organ, piano, electric piano, and vocals. I was just telling my son this morning that I miss Brian Auger so much. I really do. He was such a ball to have on this show. Let me tell you what he's doing right now. He's in Germany through October, and hopefully they're getting a taste of just you, just me, because Brian's daughter wanted to learn that song inside and out so she could sing it. So maybe she's with Dad. They're going to be making plans to do this. I just heard about this the other day. There is a new venue in Reading, PA, very close to, if not on the grounds of, the very same place where they have the Berks Jazz Festival. So Brian is going to get together with Jeff Golub, and they will be there on November the 30th in Reading, PA. So you heard those folks who were here that day. Brian had wanted to return to talk about what was happening in November. So he will have had a lot of touring under his belt. He will necessarily want to have a place to relax, right? So he can come here and talk about it. We're going to try to work on that. Oh, that song is just so stunning in all ways. Oh, 1970, what can I tell you? We also heard from a gentleman that has just received my attention. So glad that he did. Marianne, thank you so much for drawing the attention to this amazing fellow on guitar. And actually, Rick Udler has been described as a citizen of the world because he extracts superb musical lessons from where he has been. That's on his website. Here's the deal with Rick. First of all, he was born in Santiago, Chile, to parents who were Argentinian of Eastern European extraction. And then he moves to Brazil when he's 11, gets involved in music, having had a rich history because of where he has been. Then in 1981 to 1987, he lives in New Orleans, and he lives in Miami and Los Angeles. Then in 1987, he returns to Brazil, where he is considered some kind of authentic wonder, and branched out a great deal, too, on that guitar. He actually had a chance to play George Harrison in a Beatles production of their Lives in Brazil. So that's pretty heavy stuff. What you heard is from a 2006 release, Papaya. The song was called Amigo Paulo, which wasn't long enough, but that's okay. The reason that he's been brought to my attention at this particular juncture is because, and everything is falling because I'm so excited about this, he is on tour now in the United States, and he's going to play after the, I think, a place in Alexandria, Virginia. Yes, tonight. He is going to be at Jazzway 6004 in Baltimore. Jazzway6004.org is the place to go to get your tickets. A very intimate venue. Here's the deal. It's in Marianne and Howard's house, which is very much like a Frank Lloyd Wright house. It is beyond stunning. You come into the walk-up driveway. It's on a hill. And there's sliding glass doors. There's a bar to the side. Not necessarily real small. Smaller than Ram's Head in Annapolis, Maryland. So you have to get your tickets. I hope it's going to be a sellout. Rick is going to be there. Rick Udler is the gentleman's name. playing his guitar, this authentic music like you can't believe. You know how some people like to tell you that they play Brazilian guitar? Well, they learned it from other people, and they weren't necessarily there in Brazil. When you know that somebody has been there and you can hear, you can feel Rio underneath your feet. You can feel the sand. You can see the statue in the distance. That's how you know it's authentic. So the tracks that he sent me, I was on cloud nine. Rick Udler and Jazzway6004.org. He's going to be there on Saturday. If you get a chance to go, local folks, and I know that at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful St. Michael's Jazz Festival is happening for this Columbus Day weekend. And we heard Joanna to start the set. This is going to be so awesome. St. Michael's is beautiful anyway. The boats are docked. The houses are exquisite. You take a boat ride through St. Michael's, it's like nothing you've ever seen. The caliber of people that will be there hungry for jazz, unmatched. It's upstairs at the Town Dock Restaurant on Mulberry Street in St. Michael's. And let me tell you the lineup. It's going to start tomorrow. The saxophonist that is unreal, Paul Carr, tomorrow, two shows. Joanna Pascal is going to be there with Fred Hughes on piano, Amy Shook on bass, and Frank Russo on drums. Juanita Williams and the Mars Fortet will be there on Sunday, and then there will be jam sessions. Then there's going to be Paul Carr's Jazz Academy of Washington, and on Sunday, Jeff Antoniak, another unbelievable saxophonist, and his jazz band masterclass. Sunday brunch, Amy Shook Trio. Phew. Man, seriously, this is going to be a weekend of serious jazz in all its forms. And if you like that voice of Joanna Pascal, you know where you will be. And folks who don't live in this region, I'm so sorry. But look, you have to make sure that you keep in touch with what Joanna Pascal does, because you heard her. She's going to be traveling a little bit now and branching out. If you get a chance to see her in person, please do. We have about 40 minutes or so left to the show. Can we please do this? Because we promised earlier on the Facebook teaser that we would get to George Strait. Oh, George Strait! Oh, my God! George Duke. Oh, my gosh. There I was back in country music days. Sorry. George Duke from Dreamweaver had to play the song because next week, Stanley Clark, who's playing the upright bass on this, will be at Blues Alley. Gonna go see him. Stones of Orion on Hyper Jazz. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz. One of my favorite songs by Steely Dan from Asia. Woo, back in 1977. Yeah, there's a special reason why I played that, y'all. Hold on now. Oh, my gosh, so excited. I can't take it. You know, that was, what was it, their sixth album and first platinum record. Hear Michael McDonald in the background there? Oh, I love that. And also Paul Griffin. So amazing about that particular guitar solo. Do you know it took 7 top studio musicians before it was decided that, you know, the powers that be, Walt and Donald, decided they liked it enough to include it as a solo. So Jay Graydon, woo, the crowds went wild. He finally got it right, so that's what you heard. Just such an amazing project. I can't even tell you. Timothy B. Schmitz on this, Michael Omartian, if you know anything about contemporary gospel music. Whoa, He was part of that. Joe Sample, Wayne Shorter. Yes, all a big part of the success of Asia. And the reason why I played that particular song, besides the fact that Peg is just such a joyful song, what is it about that song? Not that he was on the project at the time. He came along much later. Jim Beard is the keyboard player for Steely Dan at this particular time, and he's been with them for several years now. Well, Jim Beard has a project of his own out, and he'll be with us next Thursday. Yes, indeed. Jim Beard just wrapped up the tour with Steely Dan, and he'll be here with us on Hybrid Jazz next Thursday. I can't tell you how excited I am. It's going to be a really wild birthday week. My friend Fernanda is going to be with us on the 15th. I'm so excited more about that. We're going to wax poetic about that on the Facebook and Twitter pages in the next couple of days. My heart is full. Let's make sure that we do this so we have a song to play after this. We heard from my new friend, Tom Lorem. Tom Lorem, right before Steely Dan. This cat is so interesting. I can't even tell you. He came out of nowhere this week on my Facebook page. He has worked with a number of different professionals through the years. Amazing guitar work. A new album is coming out. The track you heard was Chrysalis. Tom has one of these stories where his childhood couldn't have been all that it could have been. And through the years, there have been some struggles with addiction, alcoholism, and drugs, and he just fell under the weight of it all. And he developed an intensely personal relationship with Jesus. And now he's back, and he's labeling himself as a contemporary Christian guitarist. And I thought that that would be the perfect little balance for Halloween. Don't you? I think that would be just marvelous to hear this intensely spiritual, on fire, passionate, talented, articulate guy who is based in Maryland. Although if you look at his Facebook page, his wife has put on there that they live in Antarctica. There's a sense of humor involved in all of this too. So it's just going to be really cool. It's going to be, let's see how we can put this. It will be like Candy Corn Revival. How's that? Oh, so much fun, really. What else did we hear? I am just tripping because it's the end of the show and we don't usually play. Oh, yes, George Duke, yes. From Dreamweaver, Stones of Orion with Stanley Clarke. And that was a nod to Cannonball Adderley, who George worked with in those early days. And George and Cannonball did a particular project that maybe we can get our hands on between now and October 15th, the next show. It is going to trip you out so much, you are not going to believe it. Back in the day, it was very popular to do instrumental pieces that were about the Zodiac. So we're going to try to find one of those and play it for you next Tuesday, yes. At the same time, by the way, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Look, it's Thelonious Monk's birthday, all right? We got to do this. Nice work if you can get it. Happy birthday, Monk. We know where you are looking down on us. Thank you for all that you've done on Hyper Jazz. thank you so much, everybody, for a great show today. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, Thelonious Monk. Happy birthday to you. And thanks to everyone who came into the chat room today. Joanna Pascal, Mark Arthur Miller, we love you. Thanks for taking the time. And Fred Hughes, thanks for chiming in today. Beach and Griselda, love you. Bye.